So one thing I wanted to, the discussion that you have to have when you talk about Shemitah's Kesafim is what the nature of Shemitah's Kesafim is. What happens when the loan is cancelled? What does that mean, the loan is cancelled? The way that the poskim, that the achronim talk about it, and Rishonim really, is it afka asa de malka? Is it something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides that the loan is now hereby cancelled? Or is it, no, it's a din on you, the lender, to tell the person who's trying to pay back the money, don't worry, I've been mishamet the loan, I'm cancelling the loan. But the fact is, he actually does owe you the money. And it's just, you have a religious obligation to be mochel the money that he really does owe you. Those are the two tzadim of the chakira. So again, number one, that one way to look at it is that Kadosh Baruch Hu cancels the loan, the guy owes you nothing. The other way to view it is, of course he owes you something. It's just that you have a religious obligation. Same way you have a religious obligation to put on tefillin and to take lulav and to eat matzah, you have a religious obligation to say that you're mochel. Those are the two tzadim over here. We saw a little bit about this in the Pilpul Charifta on the bottom of the Rush. The Rush had said that since we has a suffix, whether we should pass on like the first lashon and the second lashon on a 10-year loan, that when you have a 10-year loan and Shemitah comes in the middle. So the first lashon of the Gemara was that Shemitah is Meshamit, that it does cancel the loan. The second lashon of the Gemara is that Shemitah does not cancel the loan. Which way should we pass on? The Rush says, Savik Rabbanan Lokula. Since Shemitah Bezman says only Drabbanan, we should go Lekula in the situation of Safik. What does it mean to go Lekula? So you would have thought that to go Lekula means, what do you do when you're not sure if someone owes you money and it's a Safik? What does it mean to go Lekula? What do you do about a Safik about money? No, you tell me, what do you do about a Safik of money? Hamotzi Mechaver Alav Rai, you don't pay. But says the Rosh, no, you go Lekula, and therefore Shemitah doesn't cancel the loan, and the guy has to pay. Ask the Pilpul Charifta in the name of the Beis Yosef, what are you talking about? That's not Safik Lekula. That's a Safik Mammon. Safik Mammon, the halacha should be that he shouldn't have to pay. Why is the halacha here that he does have to pay? Says the Pilpul Charifta, because this is not a Safik Mammon. Shemitah's Safim is not a din in dine mammonis. It's a din in Isser V'Hetek. It's a din in ritual law, which sounds like it's saying that it's not that the guy, that Shemitah is about whether he owes you money or not. He for sure owes you the money. Shemitah is your ritual, religious obligation to tell him that he doesn't have to pay you back. To be mochel him. Without that mechila though, does he in fact owe you the money? Yes. Huge nafkamina. Huge nafkamina. Shemitah year comes and goes. And you had borrowed money from someone. Do you have an obligation to try to pay him? If you hold Afkasa de Malka, that Kodesh Baruch Hu cancels all loans, and therefore there's no chov anymore, so do you have an obligation to try to pay him? No, it'd be a waste. Well, why would you try? You don't owe him anything. It's like trying to pay some random person that you don't owe anything to. But if you hold, it's not that Hashem cancels the loan. It's just that he has a personal obligation to be mochel the loan. Well, then it would turn out that you have to try. You have to try to pay him and then wait for him to be machal. Wait for him to say, no, don't worry, I'm observing Shemitah, and therefore the loan is machal. This is the machlokes Rishonim. Rov Rishonim assume. Can you guess which side Rov Rishonim would assume? That God cancels it or that it's a religious obligation to cancel it? What do you think? Well, how did you always understand Shemitah? What happens to Shemitah here with the money that's owed to you?
Of course, I would just say that because it's just once you make it like an obligation on people to be
mochel
the loan, it just causes
me problems. Okay. Meaning, when you trust it to people, the law is not going to be observed nearly as well. So just make it that it is. God said so. So it is. So I think that's the way most people understand Shemitah in general, is that it gets cancelled. Meaning that Hashem says that any loan you make has this Shemitah limit to it. And when Shemitah comes, the loan isn't there anymore. That's what Kodesh Baruch Hu is doing. That's the way Rov Rishonim assume. The Rashba writes this way in the Tshuva. The Ramban in the Tshuva Smichasas, the Ramban says this way. The big Shita that disagrees, with this is the Shita of the Sefer Yerayim. Sefer Yerayim writes, I think it might be in the Marmal Kamos here somewhere. Sefer Yerayim writes as follows. If it's not in the Marmal Kamos, it's at least quoted in the piece from Rav Asher Weiss. Here it is, source number 23. Says the Sefer Yerayim, V'chov sha'over shviyas, Eino rashay lo v'la'akvo, Ela al pi ha'malve. When Shemitah has passed, you cannot withhold payment unless the guy you owe the money to tells you that it's okay to withhold payment. If the guy didn't tell you, don't worry, I'm ochel, you still have to pay it back. What does that tell you? That the chov is still there. That Shemitah year alone does not cancel a chov. The only thing is, if the malva wants your money, if when you offer it, he says, okay, fine, I'll take it, you can then take him to a din Torah and say, he's not observing the halacha. The halacha is that he has to be mshamit, the halacha is that he has to be mochel, and he's not being mochel. Kashat tzuva, like he was commanded to do. Ubezin yechayvu amalva lomer mshamit ani. And Bezin will force the Malva to say that, don't worry, I'm observing the laws of Shemitah, I'm gonna therefore be mochel v'lon. Why would Bezin force him to do that? He has a religious obligation to do that. And therefore, does Bezin force on these kinds of... This would be the same as Bezin doing what? Is Bezin forcing a person who refuses to take lulav to take lulav? Right? This would be like Bezin forcing a person who refuses to wear tefillin to wear tefillin. It's a religious obligation. That's what the Urayim is saying, though. I mean, the Urayim is saying Bezin forces him because, no, meaning, that's why I asked you before, how do you view Shemitah? If you view Shemitah as it's a monetary thing, and God says that he doesn't owe you the money anymore, so then, in a Chinami, of course Bezin can force him like they would in any monetary issue. But we're saying, no, says the Urayim, it's not a monetary thing. He does owe you the money. You have a religious obligation, though, to tell him that you're being malchah. And therefore, the forcing that Bezin does is not like forcing someone to pay. It's not like forcing someone in a monetary issue. The forcing that Bezin does is for a religious obligation. Yeah?
No, I was going to say that the forcing him not to do a los ase, they're not forcing him to do an ase. Meaning, they're forcing him not to... It's a los ase to ase for the money.
It's a los ase to ask for the money, and it's an ase to forgive the money. It's both.
So which one is it? Are they forcing him to take lulav, or are they forcing?
I think it's on the assay, because over here we're talking about what the Urayim is saying is that the borrower has to offer the money. His obligation, since he owes it, he has to offer that money. So I didn't ask him for it; he's offering it. I'm just saying, okay, great. But my mitzvah assay when he offers the money is to say, no, I'm mochal. I'm keeping Shemitah's canceling this. I am allowing Shemitah to cancel this. So Bezin's forcing me to do that, to do the essay part of it.
So it's chiyuv on the lova, the not, to tell him, I'll pay you back.
Right.
That's a mitzvah, that's a mitzvah assay in Torah?
It's a mitzvah assay.
Is it a mitzvah assay for the lova to ask, to tell the mava, you know, I'll pay you back, don't worry.
Not a mitzvah, that's just a general obligation, paying what you owe. Whenever you owe money, you got to pay money. You got to pay what you owe. So yeah, so he's got to go pay what he owes. But then the malva has to say, Shemitah says that you don't pay me. But he has to offer it. Then you turn around and say, sorry, Shemitah says you don't have to pay me. If he fails to say that, then Bezin's kofel like they would for any other mitzvah saseh. Now, we do have a similar type of discussion in other areas of halacha as well. Meaning a similar type of discussion, does it happen automatically, or is it something that's your personal obligation? Is this does the Torah law affect the monetary obligation, or is it a Torah law as a religious obligation, but the monetary obligation is still a monetary obligation? Let's say, for example, like this. You want to borrow money from me, you want to buy a house, and you don't have the $600,000 it costs to buy a house, so you want to borrow money from me. And I'm doing you a great favor by lending you money. It's a really nice thing to do. And, you know, the bank would charge you an interest rate, let's say, of 5%. But I'm such a good guy that I'm going to charge you an interest rate of 2% to borrow $600,000 to buy a house. A really nice guy. You're thrilled with that. You're so excited that I'm willing to give you a better rate than the bank is willing to give you. And you sign on for it. What did we just do, both of us? What issue did we just do with this agreement? Ribbis. It's an obvious, right? Interest is ribbis. So we both violated Nisr Daraisa with that agreement. Good? But we both agreed to it. Comes the 30 years and the loan is due. Do you owe me the money? do you owe me that extra money, the ribbis money? Or do we say no, that if ribbis is against Torah law, then there's no monetary obligation to pay it? So there, again, two ways to look at it. Either there is a monetary obligation, it's just that you violated the ritual law, the religious obligation to not do that, but there is a monetary obligation that once you committed to doing it, that you have to pay up. Or do you say, no, there's no monetary obligation whatsoever. The halacha of ribbis is afkasa d'malcha. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, there is no such thing as ribbis. There is no monetary obligation to pay ribbis. Yeah?
But in terms of amot mechavera, how do you, the other person ever even get his money back if he wanted it? I mean, in this case, he would have no claim to get his money back. I mean,
everyone agrees that they want to pay the ribbis.
Obviously, but if he goes to Beis Din.
Yeah, they go to Beis Din 30 years later and they say, look, the guy says I'm interested in paying the ribbis. The other says I'm interested in taking the ribbis. They just want to know, now that we already have this agreement, should he pay me because he owes me the money, or should we say no, the whole thing was invalid to begin with and therefore he doesn't owe me anything? Maybe, right? It sounds like a very similar idea. Do we assume that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through the laws of ribbis, makes it that there is no monetary chov whatsoever? Or is there a monetary chov, it's just that it's usher to implement that monetary chov? So the Ritva, in the beginning of Masechet Kedushin, says that there is a chiyuv that the lova has to pay the ribbis. And if the malva, let's say, it might not be if there's a chiyuv of the lova to pay the ribbis, it's still usher, right? It's an isser to pay ribbis. Mm-hmm. So let's say the lova paid the ribbis. The malva takes that money, and he's mekadesh nisha with that money. So if you hold that it's that there's no chiyuv to pay the ribbis, so then it's not the malva's money. She's not mekadeshes. But if you hold that there's a chiyuv mamon, the lova has toward the malva, even though it's usher to pay it, but there's a chiyuv mamon that the lova has to the malva, it becomes the malva's money, and Meili could be Mekadesh Nisha with that money, because it's his money. Now the Chaznish, Nebenezerson Membe, says, against the Ritva, he says, how could that be? That there's a Chiv Mamon that the Torah says you're not allowed to pay? Meaning, I'm not allowed to pay ribbis. So how could you say that there is a Chov Mamoni, there is a monetary obligation that the Torah imposes on me because I borrowed the money, so I have a monetary obligation to pay that ribbis. That was the agreement, monetary obligation. But it's not possible or not permissible to actualize that monetary obligation. But again, the Torah is going to say, I have a monetary obligation to pay this, but the Torah says, you better not pay it because it's aser. So I'm stuck. How could that be? If I do pay it, I'm violating ribbis. If I don't pay it, I'm violating stealing. But can such a situation exist? Says the Chaznish. Can't imagine that such a situation could possibly exist. There'd be a lot of nafkaminas la'alacha between these two ways of understanding ribbis. One is, if the malva collects ribbis from the lover, is he in violation of geza? If there's no monetary obligation, he's definitely in violation of ribbis. Question is, he also in violation of geza? If there's no monetary obligation, by collecting the ribbis, he's in violation of geza. Yeah, because he thought he had to. So you convince someone that he owes you something when he doesn't really, and then you take it. That's geza. Because the guy thinks he owes it. Because the Torah says he doesn't owe it. Meaning, if you assume that it's a cost of development. Well, that's the discussion, right? If it takes away the monetary obligation, it doesn't really owe. Another nafkamina might be, let's say you have a lova that converts to Christianity or something after lending money with ribbis, after borrowing money with ribbis. So is the malva allowed to collect from him the ribbis? Because the halacha is that mumar has a din of a nachri. So The Shardaya in Hilchas Ribbis quotes this suffix. Again, a lova was hamir daso, becomes a mumar after he borrows money beribbis. Is the malva allowed to collect that ribbis money? Because you're allowed to lend money to a guy, to a mumar with ribbis. So l'chora it's tali on that issue. If there's no chiyuv whatsoever, then the lova is pater even after he becomes a mumar, because at the time of the very loan, of the actual loan, the obligation never kicked in. Because at the time of the loan, he was still religious, he was still observant. So the obligation never kicked in the first place. So there is no chiyuv tashlum meyikara. But according to the Ritva, there is a shibud mamoni, right? There is a real shibud mamon. It's just that you can't actualize that shibud mamon by taking the ribbis money from him because of Vanessa ribbis. And that, when does that iser happen? When he pays it back. But now he's a mumar. I'm allowed to take ribbis from a mumar. So then it should be mutter to take from him. So that would be enough kamina. If you hold that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes it that there is no chiyuv mamon whatsoever, then even if he was hamer dasa, subsequently you would not be allowed to take from him. But if there is a chiyuv mamon, it's just that I have a religious obligation to not take that mamon, well then when the religious obligation goes away because he's a mumar, I am allowed to take that mamon. Another nafkamina would be, Shardeya also has a suffix about a svek sveka on ribbis, that he thinks that we could take the money from the borrower, from the lover, with a svek sveka. Normally the rule of hamotzi mechaver olav haraya is so strong that even b'makom svek sveka, we don't make the person give up the money. That's when it's a suffix about dinei mamonis. You're not sure, does Reuven owe Shimon the money? Does Reuven not owe Shimon the money? Svek sveka doesn't help. Without clear, irrefutable proof, he doesn't have to pay the money. But if you hold it to din in ritual law, it's like taking a lulav, it's like benching, it's like kashrus, then you'd follow the laws of svek sveka. And if svek sveka says he should pay the money, then you would pay the money. So that would be another nafkamina, ledina. Now, l'chora, the Chazon Ish's shita that we mentioned before, that it can't be. What did the Chazon Ish say? It can't be that there's a monetary obligation to pay the ribbis, but that religiously, ritual law says you're not allowed to take it. Because what do you do then? Either the guy's being over on Geneva or he's being over on ribbis. How could that be? L'chora, the Chazon Ish is against the Urayim. Why is he against the Urayim? What did the Urayim say? That when it comes to our halacha of Shemitah's Ksafim, you have a monetary obligation to pay back the loan, but it's usur for the guy to take the loan, to take the money back. How could you have both? According to the Chazon Ish, you can't have that stira. You can't have that you can't have a chiyuv that's impossible to actualize. That's the ha'ara, the l'chora, the Chazon Ish, is against the Yireim. Now, it could be that in a chinam, Chazon Ish is against the Yireim, but what do we say? Most Rishonim assume, not like the Yireim. Most Rishonim assume, like the Rav Rishonim, like Tzavkas of the Malta. And therefore, there is no chiyuv mamon either. So that's one way to be miyashiv Chazon Ish. It's okay. He's allowed to go against the Urayim. He doesn't have to answer for every Urayim. Another way to be miyashiv Chazon Ish is that it could be that ribbis is different than shmitas ksafim. Why is ribbis different than shmitas ksafim in this regard? When it comes to Sidra Araisa is Sidra Banan. Why would that help though? I mean, what we're trying to say over here is that when it comes to ribbis, it's impossible that there's a chiyuv for him to pay you and that you're not allowed to take it. Whereas by Shemitah, apparently the Urayim has no problem saying that. That there's a chiyuv for him to pay you, but you're not allowed to take it.
I'll say that because I would say that by nowadays, by Shemitah, it's often. There's a mix of the rice and the rabbanim, because yes, you're chayim in the rice and the Torah, but the rabbanim instituted it after, and there's two conflict. I would say there's two.
Yeah, but why would that matter with you? It's still the same stira that he's got to pay you, but he's not allowed to pay you. It's still the same stira. Let's think along different lines for a second. How do you arrive at a situation of ribbis? What happens? What happens? Describe the process where someone's going to end up paying interest. Guy needs money. Reuven needs money. What does he do? He borrows money from Shimon. Good. Where's the ribbis coming? I want to borrow money, and Shimon says,
yeah, sure, but in 2 years from now, you gotta pay me.
Good. So at the very time of the loan, Shimon already included in the deal that there's going to be ribbis, right? So the very loan started be'isr. Nachon? The conditions of the loan were be'isr.
I could say you owe me $1 million. I'm saying.
Okay, so the conditions of the loan are be'isr. Shmitas k'safim. How does it start? Reuven needs money. He goes to Shimon and says, I'd like to borrow money. And Shimon says, sure, no problem. 7 years later comes a Shemitah year. And the money still wasn't paid back. So now we have the whole issue. Does he still really owe the money or not? But at the time of the loan, there was no issue. It was just a regular loan. At the time that the loan was made, no one was violating anything. That might be the difference between Shemitas Ksafim and Ribbis. By Ribbis, it's a Chet Me'ikara. You're violating the Halacha Me'ikara. So that's where the Chazon Ish is going to say, it can't be that when you do something that is an Avera Me'ikara, that creates a Chiyuv Mamo. But by Shemitas Ksafim, when the loan was made, it was done B'derech Heter. And therefore, it creates a Chiyuv Mamon. So Shemitah may say that the guy has to be Mochel that Chiyuv, but the Chiyuv Mamon is there because the Chiyuv Mamon was able to be Chal since it was totally B'derech Heter. It was B'derech Isser, and therefore the Chiyuv Mamon could not have been Chal.
He didn't do anything. He didn't pay him
Yeah, but the issue is even to make an agreement of ribbis.
That's an issue.
Yeah, he can't even agree to pay ribbis. There was an issue at the very time of the loan. Not only that, even more fundamentally, if Reuven lends money to Shimon Baribis or borrows money from Shimon Baribis, whose issur is it? Both. The Malva and the Lovez issur. By ribbis, the Lovez also included in the issur. I borrow money from you and I want to pay you back 8 years later. And you take the money from me. Whose issur is it? You took the money, no questions asked, no mishamit anilach. Whose issur is it? It's only the issur of the lender, right? For taking the money back. Is it the borrower's issur? He's got no issur. So maybe the Chazon Ish has problems saying that you're going to have a Chiyuv Mamon that you're not allowed to pay back when it's going to be your Isser to pay it back. That's what the Chazon Ish says. How could it be that if I borrow money with Ribbis, I'm going to have to pay you back Midine Mamonis, but Isser Vehetzer says that it's an Isser for me to pay you back? That can't be. That's a Stira Minei Ubei. But by Shemitas Ksafim, I borrow money from you and I have a Chiyuv to pay you back. And if I do pay you back, I don't violate any Isser. That's okay. You know who violates an Isser if I pay you back? You violate the Isser. Maybe that, the Chazon Ish, is no problem. So again, three ways to be... The Chazon Ish doesn't talk about Shemitah's Ksafim. The Chazon Ish talks about ribbis. It sounded like the Chazon Ish was against the Shita Sirei. Because the Chazon Ish held that you can't have a Chiyuv Mamon when ritually you have an Isser to pay it back. So we said three ways to make the Chazon Ish work. One is Chazon Ish doesn't have to answer for every rate. He holds like Rov Rishonim that even by Shemitah there's no Chiyuv Mamon. Second answer for Chazon Ish is that fundamentally Ribbis and Shemitah are different in that Ribbis was Asr Me'ikara. The very deal was Asr to begin with. By Shemitah it was a normal loan. It wasn't Asr Me'ikara. And the third way to answer it is that by Ribbis, it was an Isser equally on the Malva and the Lova. By Shemitah, though, the Isser was only on the Malva, the Isser is not on the Lova. So maybe the Chazon Ish works, even according to the Urayim. Those are the three ways of understanding the Chazon Ish in light of the Urayim. Now, this may have another ramification, this Machlokas Urayim and Rov Rishonim. Rav Asher Weiss points out, he points all of this out, in Hilchas Lulav. Ooh, Sholem Darshan within Lamed Yom. Hilchas Lulav. Magen Avraham and Simon Tafresh Lamed Zayin Sif Katan Beis. writes, in the name of the Urayim, this is going to be important, Urayim Lashitasa, writes in the name of the Urayim, to be Miyashev, a Kasha of Tosos. Tosos asks, a Kasha in Lulav HaGazel. Why do I need a Pasuk to tell me that a Lulav HaGazel is Pasul? I shouldn't need a Pasuk in the Torah to tell me that a Lulav HaGazel is Pasul. It should be obvious that a Lulav HaGazel is Pasul. Why? Mitzvah Babavera. Right? That's the Kasha of Tosfos. It's a Mitzvah Babavera, so of course the Lulav HaGazel is Pasul. Why do I need a Pasuk? Tell me that it's Pasul. So, that's Tosfos Kasha. So the Urayim answers, that the reason you need a pasuk to tell me the Lulav HaGazel is pasul is if you steal it from a guy. If you hold that Gezel Akum is mutter min haTorah, no one holds it's mutter min Rabbanan, everyone holds it's asur. But the question: if you hold Gezel Akum is mutter min haTorah, then it wouldn't be a mitzvah b'avera, right? If I steal my lulav from a guy, so comes along the pasuk and says, yeah, but it's not lachem. And if it's not lachem, you can't be yotzei the mitzvah with it. That's why I need a pasuk. That's the Urayim's answer. Right? You got that? Chassam Sofer in his Chiddush Mansukah says, wait a second. If how does that make any sense? If it's mutter to steal from Goyim, doesn't that by definition mean that if you steal from the guy, that it's lachem? That it does belong to you? How could you say no? If it's mutter to steal from Goyim, it's not a mitzvah b'avera, that's why I need a pasuk to say, yeah, but you're still not yotzei the mitzvah because it's not lachem, it's not yours. Why isn't it mine? If you hold Gezel Akum is mutter, doesn't it become mine then, when I steal from a guy? On a Daraisa level? That's Chassam Sofer's kasha in the Urayim. Shtark kasha. But it could be that the Urayim is l'shitasa. The Urayim holds that whether you are the bailim on something, whether you are the owner on something, is not determined by whether it's mutter or asr for you to do that. What do the Urayim say by us, by Shemitah? When I borrow this money, 8-9 years later after Shemitah, I still owe it. I still owe the money. That doesn't mean it's mutter for the other guy to take it. Whether I'm the bailim on something or not is not determined by whether it's mutter or asr to do. The guy who lent me the money is not allowed to take it. But you know what? He's the bailim on it. It's his chov. He's entitled monetarily to have it. And if he takes it, he can be Mekadish Nisha with it. It's his. But it's Aser. The Urayim holds you could have this mixture of something that's ritually Aser to do, religiously Aser to do, but it's monetarily yours. And therefore it could turn out that yes, for me to steal from a guy is mutter. But I'm still not going to be the Bailam on it. Just because it's mutter for me to do doesn't make me the bailum when I steal. And still not going to be lachem. That's how you can be miyashiv, the Urayim, from the kasha of the Chassam Sofer. And it would turn out the Urayim is l'shitasa. Unbelievable chiddush. Now, Rav Asher then backs up a little bit and he says, maybe not. Maybe even if you hold like the Urayim and the Magen Avraham about the din of Lachem, maybe by Shemitah's Ksafim you could still hold like the Ritva. You know, I mean, by Shemitah's Ksafim you could hold like Rov Rishonim, and by Ribbis you could hold like the Ritva. Because it could be that it's not so strange that you'd be allowed to use someone else's Mamon or take someone else's Mamon even if it's not Lachem. The whole taina of the Chaznish was about a chov, a shibud that the person has. That a chov and a shibud is not a kinyan. It just means that he owes you the money. And when it's not royal tashlumin, it's just not a chov. But the sharpness of the Vart is a very sharp Vart. That the Urayim and Hilchas Lulav only makes sense, or makes the most sense, in light of the Urayim in Hilchas Shemitas Ksafim. There's another parallel of the Safka Asa D'Malcha thing. There's another halacha in Dine Shemitah. What do you have to do with Shemitah produce? You have stuff growing in your field during Shemitah. Right? Forget about Shemitah's Ksafim for a moment. Let's talk about Shemitah's Karka. You have items growing in your field during Shemitah. What's your obligation? You're the farmer. What's your obligation? What? Leave it. Meaning, it has to be Hefker. What does that mean, it has to be Hefker? Does Hashem make it Hefker? Or do you make it Hefker? Meaning, let's say I don't make it Hefker. I lock up my field. No one's allowed in. And someone sneaks in and takes it. Did they steal? Is that called stealing? Do we assume HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares it Hefker, and therefore it's Hefker, whether I declared it, whether I, the farmer, declared Hefker or not, it is Hefker, and therefore anyone can come and take it, and they did not violate stealing? Or do we say, no, it's a religious obligation as a farmer to declare it Hefker. But if I didn't actually declare it Hefker, then it remains mine. I'm a Rasha for not declaring it Hefker, but it remains mine. Same exact chakira. And this is machlokas achronim when it comes to the din of hefker of Shemitah produce. The Mabit in Chelek Aleph Simen Aleph writes that if a guy builds a fence around his field and he's not mafkir any of his peros, it's hefker anyway. Rachmana afker al the peros de shvius. Hashem made it hefker. But the Beis Yosef, Maran Beit Yosef, in his tshuvas, Avkas Rochel, says that no, Hashem doesn't make anything hefker. It's a mitzvah on the Bailim to be mafkir. And if the Bailim wasn't mafkir, the peros, then they're not going to be hefker. Now, it's a very similar machlokas, right, to the one about Shemitah. But it's probably not Tully Zebezeh. Meaning, it's possible that someone could hold the hefker of peros is afkasa de malchus, Hashem making it hefker, and still hold like the Urayim by Shemitas Ksafim that it's your personal obligation to be mochel alone and it's not Hashem's doing it. Because by the hefker of the peros it says Vashvias Tishmatena. And the pashtus is that Shvias is the Hashmata of the peros from the Bailim. It's just that, in addition to that, the Bailim has to observe that hefker and acknowledge that hefker. But by Shemitas Ksafim, it just says Shemot Kol Bal Mashayado. The pasuk sounds like it's talking to the gavra when it comes to Shemitas Ksafim. Meaning, when it comes to Shemitas Karka, the pasukim sound like it's a din in the karka, that it just is, that anything that grows in Shemitah year is hefker, just is hefker. But the Pesukim, when it talks about Shemitah's Ksafim, sounds like it's talking to a Bailim. You, the Bailim, have an obligation to be Mafkir. Not that it just is Hefkir. Okay, there's Rav Asher has a lot more to say, but we'll leave it at that, I guess. We'll leave it at that for now. And maybe next time we'll already start a new sugya. Okay? Alright. Tomorrow we'll do some Rosh Hashanah topic. We'll try to do Marmakomis in the morning.